Hey, pup. Hey, pup. Hey, puppy. Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, May 27th, Sunday evening, 2007. Thanks, Wesley, for that commercial. I really am indebted to you. I will do a commercial for you one day, if you let me. Anyway, tonight we're going to finish. All my birds are upstairs. They really are honking because they want to be part of this show. All my birds, I have three parrots, and they all want to be radio hosts. On bbsradio.com, which they will, you know how it goes. It's a lot of fun to do this show. It really is. It takes a lot of time. Anyway, today we're going to finish up the 18-hour tape series that everybody BBS Radio gets for free. And if you're not a member of BBS Radio, then you have to pay $200 or $300 for this silly bunch of babbling that's been going on for the last, I don't know, several months. Anyway, Bob Hoover's going to be on the show. Oh, no, sorry. Randy Masters is coming on Saturday. Well, he's already on, actually. This is Sunday. I'm still used to that Tuesday show. I don't know what's. I think I'll get this right. You know, remember, I'm Dr. Fred. I can do this stuff. I can actually tell you about something that's going to be on the show that's already been there, and it's okay. But next week, we're going to have Bob Hoover. Bob Hoover is a Bob Moog, Tom Oberheim type guy, and these were great inventors of linear synthesizers and analog synthesizers that I use for making Pleiadian sounds. And what we're doing now is, with his speaker technology, we're preparing to produce some levitation in the laboratory type devices, which I've already done. I don't know if I can duplicate it, but I'm pretty darn sure I can. If you look in the Rays of Truth Crystals of Light, you'll see a sound experiment that actually produced levitation in front of many, many witnesses. It was really grand. It was the Grand Slam. Also, we're going to have a heck of a seminar. Bob Hoover is going to be teaching on Sunday along with Valerie Olmsted. Remember that Olmsted. You know how it goes, Olmsted, when you say her name. And she's got a lot of new stuff coming up. And then I've got a friend of mine coming on. His name is Steve Turner. He has a company called CatlinRadio.com, and I collect these old antique plastic radios that are marbleized, and I repair them. We're going to talk about the consciousness of the radio world and what collection of these devices and repairing it does for your enhanced experience. Also, we'll be bringing on some American Indian chiefs and medicine men from different tribes. We're going to be doing that later on in this year, for the purpose of sharing with you the multicultural dimensional approach of life, consciousness, and extraterrestrials, along with science and tradition, which is very old. The Indian stuff is the best. I have spent many years with the Hickory Apaches at Dulce and a lot of Lakota buddies. And let me tell you something. These guys have got a lot to share with us, and they're almost, some of them are authors. One of them is an attorney. Now, they're all professionally set. And they're Native Americans, which we love dearly. After all, we took their land from them. We owe them a shot at BBS Radio. So anyway, I also welcome Tantalk 1340 listeners down in Tampa Bay and Miami. I'm going to be coming down your way one of these days and doing some live shows. It'll be a ways off. I got to get this book finished. It will be finished. We're also getting back into music. We're going to start our next album. And a lot of stuff's going on around here. So anyway, I want to bring Dr. Fred Bell in and let him do his last little pizzazz on his tape series. And there's the Laguna Beach sound. Birds and more birds and waves and spaceships. You can't have a spaceship without a bird, and you can't have a bird without a spaceship. It just works that way. Don't ask me why. There is no why. It is. Wow, here we go. Boy, I miss the sound of that little puppy. Wait till you hear my next concert at the June 12th seminar. I'm going to play music live. Uh-oh, now nobody's coming.
As a result, during certain astrological conditions wherein the planets Venus and the moon, our moon, line up to a certain solar alignment with the sun, solar wind conditions become just a certain way and the solar flares become a certain way, it creates a rent in the veil. And what happens is things disappear. They go into other dimensions in an area known as the Bermuda Triangle. If you were to project this triangle through the center of the Earth, you'd come out in the Philippines and you'd find another triangle or edge of the triangle, the Bermuda Triangle, down in the Philippines. And if you'd project that again, you'd find another one on the other side of the world. So there's actually three Bermuda Triangles, but the most popular one is off the coast of Florida. So this is where the dark forces are still heavily, easily reached. And of course, when things disappear into there, into another dimension, the things that are disappearing are usually negative karmic vortex things, meaning that it's a conglomeration of souls, like in a particular airplane or a particular ship or whatever is disappearing, that has a pretty much united karma to fulfill all at once. And the unification of the need for the fulfillment of this karmic purpose of these people is drawn in under certain astrological conditions, and you end up with the black hole effect right on the surface of the Earth. A good example of that was when we did the Philadelphia experiment. That particular experiment was started or initiated by the fact that when Navy ships were going through the Bermuda Triangle, spaced 1 or 2 miles apart, certain ones of the ships would become invisible to other ships that were in the triangle, but as soon as they left the triangle area, they were visible again. Now you got to understand one thing, the reason the ships were in there in the first place is they were probably coming back up to Newport News, Virginia, to get degaussed, or up to Pittsburgh to be degaussed, because what happens when you have a metal ship and you sail it all over the Earth has a huge magnetic field, and so the ship becomes very magnetized. The same thing would happen if you took a knife or a screwdriver and held it around a permanent magnet for any length of time. The screwdriver would become magnetized by the permanent magnet. Well, the ship becomes magnetized by the Earth's magnetic field. And so therefore the instruments, which are usually magnetic insensitivity, no longer work, so they have to be degaussed. And so it was one of these missions that they were coming in with this weird magnetic field on them from the Earth's parameter, and they went through the Bermuda Triangle in these astrological conditions. They ended up becoming invisible to one another on their radar sets, which is no big deal to understand when you realize that radar sets are electromagnetic in nature anyway. They're just high-frequency electromagnetism at the X-band, L-band, C-band, whatever frequency they're tuned to. So when they would arrive up in the area to be degaussed, up in Newport News or Pittsburgh, what would happen is, or Philadelphia rather, what would happen is they began to notice that these ships under certain degaussing conditions would glow and become semi-transparent. And that, of course, is the foundation of where the Philadelphia experiment began. I worked on the Philadelphia experiment at the University of Michigan in the late 50s. I didn't work on it in the 40s. That's the year I was born. But in the 40s is when the actual experimentation took place. But in the 50s, when I was involved, we were taking the data and creating laboratory conditions, simulating the coils and propulsion systems in the ships in the laboratory conditions and trying to duplicate that. But that happened in Philadelphia, we were trying to duplicate that in the laboratory, and I will tell you right now, we were highly successful. We made a lot of things dematerialize, and I'm still familiar with that technology, and it's not a problem. But the idea of the whole experimentation was not to make things dematerialize. The whole idea was to make this invisible to radar condition a normal thing that would happen all of the time. And as a result of that, the present-day stealth technology that they're using in aircraft and ships and submarines originally had its heritage from the old Philadelphia experiment days. Now, we've covered quite a few things in this seminar tape series, and I'm glad and sad that we're going to wind it down. This is coming to the end now. Fini. One of the things, so first of all, reiterating, we covered the great cover-up, which is the very beginning of this, which is such a shame to have to cover, to have to talk about cover-ups when all this divine intelligence is coming through. I want to thank a very dear friend of mine for helping out with the cover-up information. His name is William Cooper, and he just recently wrote a book called The Behold a Pale Horse, which I think everybody is crazy if they don't read it. It's every bit the equivalent of Death of Ignorance on another level. And this man, I've been around him, and I've been around some of the other people that have been supposedly people that came out and made confessions about what the government was or wasn't doing. And I know sometimes that there's a John Lear saying something against Cooper, Cooper saying something against John Lear, and he goes back and forth. These other people are criticizing one another, but there is no way to find out who is totally right on. There's always the human error, but I go by the feeling, and I've had an excellent, very good feeling being around William Cooper. And he wrote a book called Beyond the Pale Horse. And I gave you information earlier on the intelligence community, the Executive Intelligence Review, and the phone number in that. But I want to give you some numbers for William Cooper. His daily update line is 1-900-535-9800, extension 240. His hotline is 213-281-8222. If you want to order the book itself, it's 602-567-6109. And his research center is 602-567-6536. Interesting thing he said here is, well, these phone numbers. Information, comma, not money, is the power of the 90s. And, you know, I have a tendency to believe that. When you understand what Big Brother is trying to do to us, which we're allowing to happen, if we don't do something. And I've been a freedom fighter all my life. And, you know, I just have one thing that's very simple that I believe in. Give me liberty, or give me more liberty. It's that simple. We also, besides covering the cover-up information, we got into the components. We talked about the receptor, we talked about the pyramid, we talked about the vitamins, the special mineral formulas, which are very, very, very important to the body. I can't even begin to stress the amount of prevalence that I would apply to my daily living to enhance myself, to jump into a situation whereby I would find the super mineral that we talk about. We've changed, during this tape series, we actually improved the mineral formula some more and brought it up to what we now call the fourth dimension. We also got into, once we understand the components of the body and the components that can help us from things that we produce from the ET technologies and sciences, we got into systems. The body, of course, once it's component-wise, is functioning as a overall maze of a what we would call a human being, then we go into a system. And the system that we would be that our body becomes a spaceship, free of space and time. And, of course, to help that out, the Paradigm Company has built many, many different kinds of systems that are totally available. We have all kinds of catalogs and brochures and things like that. We reached at 714-499-2603 for more information. We have an annual seminar that we perform here in Laguna. I'm going to naturally phase out of the seminars more and more and go more for the video audio series, but we're going to have an annual live seminar, which will always terminate with a laser light show, fourth dimensional trip at the house here. We're having the one very soon here. This tape series is concluding at the end of March, and the first part of April we're having this annual thing. If you want to sign up for the one for 1992 or 1993, just call the number that the aforementioned number. And what I'd like to do now is give special thanks to my wife, Frauke Bell, who did a lot with the Fire Star. If you want to call and ask for her, she's not always here, but she can give you a tremendous amount of information with the Fire Star. She's been developing that as her own personal pet project. I give special thanks to David Tickle, who's on the video series, who's been an ally of mine for many years. And through his efforts, the consciousness of the Pleiadians and the Andromedans and other space people has reached rock and roll music via, of course, the big bands that he produces. You name a big band, he's produced it. And, of course, through Peter and Dan Aykroyd, through the movie industry and other writer, producer, actor types that are up there that we've worked with. TM of America, through their consistent efforts to support our programs and us theirs. And so the list goes on and on. Now what I'd like to do at this point in time is just read a few reiterations between Sannyasi and myself that took place over the years. As I move into this next phase, I will keep notes, and whenever I made a contact with Sannyasi, I always took the date down and the time and location and so on. I suppose I'll probably start doing that with the Andromedans, although the Andromedans always seem to catch me when I'm out in the field, when I don't have a pencil and paper at my side. So the first notes that I would like to read here real quick is, some of them by the way have been reproduced in the fellowship book, and others haven't, but I'm going to read a couple of things here right now and explain to you what they are. Place between a conversation between Sannyasi and myself on February 29th, 1980. And we were talking about the pyramid and people wearing the pyramid, and she said, basically had said that if the people that would be wearing the pyramid, even though that looked a little strange to society, would be the leaders of what would really be called the New Age. Now at this point in time, this is March 1991, New Age doesn't have a very good name because there's a lot of hangers-on, flakes, charlatans, and there's a whole guise of people that have reigns of the auspices of the New Age and totally done nothing but distort its real meaning and purpose. In a talk, she talked about skeptics, but this is interesting. I'm going to read something from you. I asked her about the spaceships. Well, this is back when I was learning how spaceships flew. And by the way, in that scenario that we finished a little while ago about how the spaceships operate, that was only a very, very crude, from memory, probably very rusty memory, overview of how they work. We did not go into things like how the ships are grown specifically, how they subject their energies to certain vibrations, these plants to become their ships, how they inject the resins, how they, certain kinds of sounds. We didn't go into we talked about the lens, the projector and the camera. We didn't talk about the lenses, first stage, third stage lenses that go into different octaves and tunings of light frequencies, meaning that the lenses themselves that gather the light are tuned to different frequencies for the chromatic aberration characteristics of the lenses, all these kinds of things. We left it out. But anyhow, I asked her something about the spaceship. Tell me a little bit more about the spaceships. And so on this particular day that I just mentioned, which was February 29th, 1980, she said, "Our spaceships, though physical, become living flames in flight. When you fly the astral plane, both sides are pure." And as a matter of fact, I remember the question as I got this far. I says, "How do you tell the difference between good and evil? When you first roll into a galaxy somewhere where you've never been before, or a planet or a star." And she said, "Both good and evil dwell as deep space denizens. Only purpose is a sign of progress. We fly with purpose. We lose it as it is in old age. It is immediately regained by the supersoul of the universe. Our individuality is never lost. Whether we work for God or against God matters not. For we are of God. Our forms preserve our karmic quest in search of the unmanifest. The dark powers of the universe are easily discerned. They are in search of the manifest. Through spirit gained in purity, we see both sides of the divine game of Shiva and Shakti, played not only out in 108 civilizations, not only in 1,008 different civilizations, but all civilizations throughout time and throughout space. For time here is only temporal, for those caught in it to gain the essence of its message. Space separates the various times into individualizations known to us as men, demigods, archetypes, ancients of the days, grand men of the heavens, and so on. The higher the intellect, the greater the rationale of the acceptance that we are all of one God. Intellect," and I like this one, I'm just interjecting here, I like this one. "Intellect is not a sign of genius. Genius not properly applied to space-time expression, however, breeds intellect. Intellect locks the brain to mind patterns, and the logic of the mental plane traps the individual into Maya, and he or she cannot remain space-born and are reborn onto Earth-type planes. Thus, so does the cycle of the karmic wheel receive its purpose and distribute its motion, ever holding creation in form. Now, I take that back on the date, even though I am emphatically emphasize the date of February 1980. I just realized that, looking through my notes, and this is like getting down and getting funky with Dr. Bell, that this set of notes was written in a different paper, and at the end of it had a separate date. This is how bad I was with my notes, which was 5/11/80, so May 11, 1980. And I have in parentheses, on Mother's Day. So that was something that really blew me away. How do you tell good or evil when you first arrive at their doorstep? I thought you'd like that one. And here's one of my other favorites. And I've got to say this at this point in time. I've got to tell you a little painful story. The government, as we know it, has captured 5 Pleiadian ships. And they have suspended, they have put the occupants of the vehicles, being the Pleiadians, into a chirogenic solution, meaning suspended animation. Now, if you took a human being and put them in suspended animation, the average human is not physically transcended physically into the astral plane very many times, most of them none at all. So as a result of a non-transcendation of movement of the physical body into the astral plane, the physical vehicle, if it's destroyed or frozen, will release the astral body. But if you are one of these individuals like the Pleiadians are, whereby you have moved your physical body into the astral plane, and of course many times as they have through space flight, if you were to freeze or to destroy the physical body, or actually preserve it and disable it in some way, such as temperature or whatever, or even put it in the ground, like a burial service, the astral body would be linked to the physical body until the physical body had decayed because of the characteristics of the vibratory expressions of transient back and forth between the physical astral relationship that these bodies begin to enjoy or entertain. You know, part of the reason that the Pleiadians live so long is that they have a close relationship between the physical and astral bodies, whereas the Earth people have it between sleep and waking states and a big void in between. So the dreams, for example, become memories, and they rarely last more than 1 or 2 or 3 days, whereas a Pleiadian can live on the astral or the physical plane and bring the two together. So as a result, by freezing these bodies that they've captured of these physical, these Pleiadians, because they would not teach us anything, that was their punishment, the Pleiadians are caught on the Earth-type planes in their astral bodies because their physical bodies are frozen. And so when the Pleiadian ships come nearby, the areas of containment where these bodies are kept, for example, Hangar 18 and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which they placed out in Texas where they keep them, it's kind of painful because there is communication on telepathic levels of these beings that are frozen by physical means but free by astral means, but totally held within the ring pass knot of the Earth. They are put into a form of temporary hell. So I have to think about that when the Pleiadians talk about super soul. This note came to me in February 26, 1980. The beam ship is sound powered and light separated. And the question was to Semyazi, I says, you know, she had told me at this time, and we talked about it earlier on the tape, but at this time she had said that the Pleiadians, you know, they had planned, you know, stars within a light year or so apart, and they were able to develop these space drive systems that allowed them to move around very easily, conveniently, within the system that was within a light year or two apart, by conventional means to map out the energy to make the photographic transmissions possible. And I says, well, what about the guys that go out there in the cosmos where you guys have never been before? Because I'm sure there's always an unknown, regardless of how old the race is. The universe is infinite, and because of that, there's always going to be an unknown. And Semyazi says, yes. And this is what she said. The beam ship is sound powered and light separated. Its mantrams change by each engineer who designs a particular ship. His mate is the pilot. He is the power source. She is the director of power. Each lives only with the crew. And when the crew dies, so does the ship. These ships are their signatures of a life purpose and are a karmic debt on their lifespan. They are the creations only of the captain and his soulmate. The crew is on a journey to the Creator, and this is only one path. Someday they too will find their soulmates. It is a purpose and dedication to a life of service just like ours. When I heard that, it made a lot of sense, and it sounded very, very familiar. That's just one of many things that I have been able to hear from the lips of the Pleiadian woman. Now, as we reach the end of this part of the Promise Tape series, it's like leaving an old friend. I've been working many weeks, many months, putting this together, and I hope that you get some tremendous enjoyment out of it. I will say that Samyasi is not around that much anymore. Occasionally I get something from her. Liara is coming in more and more into being now. And I'm sure the pair of them, along with Azket and a lot of the other girls that are out there and other men that are out there supporting them, will be in to help us when the time is right. We, of course, are networking people into the systems. We have a huge network going out. So when you use some of the numbers that we've left listed throughout the tape series to reach us, and you get into the systems technologies, it'll be fun to network you with different people that are also doing similar things. And in the networks, what we try to do is find the right people that are doing the same thing, the people that are working with different contact groups. Some people are working for personal achievement. Other people are working for self-help systems. There's a multitude of things that have to do with consciousness in the human body. There will be other tapes available in this series later on. There'll be a continuation of it once we've received a response from this one and we find that more and more questions probably that we did not answer that will arise, which will then dedicate our direction into the next tape series. You can feel free to call us if you need more other information. And I say to share these tapes with your friends. And I hope for the Paradigm staff that the 90s will be prosperous for you.
Well, so ends the tape series from Dr. Fred Bell, as offered at this point in time. However, there is new stuff on the internet at www.paradigm.com. Anyway, I want to share a few things with you. One area that I want to go into is, I have to bring this up because it comes up a lot, is the contactee in Switzerland who decided he was going to be the one and only contactee. I won't mention any names. The man did one. There's a certain thing about Pleiadians, and that is you share. You don't take all the glory for yourself, in other words. And unfortunately, this person tried to take the glory. He wanted to steal the flag. And I was doing a seminar back there in 1991 in Switzerland, and his wife and a bunch of his henchmen came in and tried to bust the seminar up, and they ended up getting physically ousted by the local Swiss, believe it or not. So I've been down that road. This man has insulted and criticized my work for years. I criticize and insult nothing from him. He's got his own path. But unbeknownst known to him, I also spent some time with another Pleiadian who went by the name on the terrestrial levels as Anthony James. Actually, after he met the Queen of England and for his work with NSA, he was known as Sir Anthony James. He came here from the Pleiades and he went back one day. And originally, I don't know, he never told me the whole story. He was a tall guy, about 5'11", very thin. He never ate. You go out to dinner with him, he wouldn't eat or drink anything, ever, because Pleiadians basically don't eat. They take a little spirulina equivalent of a small capsule when they're around. He had spent, they can only last so long in our atmosphere. I don't know how many years he was here, but he couldn't stay much longer. He made that quite apparent. I made contact with him originally when he was working at Sandia Labs over in northern New Mexico. Actually, he was working with a man who was married to Margaret Habsburg. Margaret Habsburg was the heiress to the Habsburg fortune, like, you know, the Rockefellers, the blah, 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 you know, this, the Habsburgs are brought up. And yes, she did own 60% of Europe, the old buildings there. So her husband died, and they were working on a ranch out of Los Alamos in the desert, guarded by NSA, and they had four alien grays working with them. Four grays, real live grays. I know it sounds wild, but I can lead you to a lot of research where about 40 of our scientists went out to a planet in Theta Reticuli 3 back long before 1990. Back in the 60s, they did this. So there's a lot of things that, you know, everybody's talking about UFOs and spotting them and, oh, they're here. We've been communicating inside track, that's the new book, for a lot longer than you realize and most people realize. And we love to look at the people out there pointing to the sky and seeing a flying saucer come by and give them a little buzz or something or hover, but that's not the level I've dealt with them at all. I've dealt with them on a much more serious, grounded, and advanced level. Advanced meaning I was there many times. And I think now, as the years go by and my work is uncovered, and there's a lot more going on, I'm getting ready to do some amazing sound stuff with some really amazing people. That'll be presented at our seminar, but I'm bringing some of the stuff out of the closet that's been in there for 20 years. It's mind-boggling stuff. It's time for the world to see the real stuff, the real technology, how it works. The holographic projectors, where do you see the sound system that's going to be coming out and surround sound to go with them, for example. But anyway, back to the point. When her husband died, Margaret moved to, she got very paranoid. She was afraid of the NSA. And she was afraid that she knew too much and they would harm her somehow. But, you know, she knows how to be quiet. So she moved over to Palm Springs, or I guess she's still there today. The government would only allow her to bring $1 billion of her money into the country per year because she could bankrupt America with her fortune. That's how wealthy these people are. Sir James Anthony, the partner, a young guy, you know, he was probably 300, 400 years old, but he looked to be 32. Blue eyes, blonde hair, a page boy cut. He went over to Los Angeles, and Margaret gave him a 25,000 square foot house in El Segundo to live in. The only catch was it didn't have any furniture because he didn't really want any. There was a courtyard in the middle of this mini estate, and in that courtyard off to one side was a little room that looked out on the courtyard, and in that little room was a portamid, a capstone, and a cot, and that's where Sir James slept and lived. And, of course, he didn't eat, so he didn't need a stove or anything. Over time, you know, he drove a black government van, you know, one of those NSA black vans. They gave him one to drive, and he visited me all the time in Laguna, and we hung out and did a lot of stuff together. And he was nervous because he was afraid our government would not let him leave this world. As I said earlier, remember the captured Pleiadians at Wright-Patterson in the cryogenics. So with that in mind, and he knew about that, he didn't want, he was afraid, you know, he was going to be a captive here. But his work had been finished at Los Alamos. He evidently never told me what it was. That was not allowed. But he finished it. So Sir James was here in El Segundo. And we hung out for about 3 or 4 months. I had met him earlier when he was still working for the government. And one of my other friends in the intelligence agency also met him and acknowledged that he was from somewhere else. So it wasn't like he was making this up. And as I said, his title had the title Sir, like Richard Branson and Paul McCartney, from the Queen and Elton John, all of them. So we became good friends. He had worked a little bit in the movie industry, even from Los Alamos. He invented the laser sight, which, of course, you see laser sights on guns now today. He invented that. It was first used in a Rambo movie, the very first one, but later on became standard issue in the military. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I know he invented himself. He probably invented some of the more advanced laser technology along with that. So anyway, one day I went over to his house in El Segundo, because he usually came down here and went to see him, and dropped in on him, and all of a sudden there was furniture everywhere in that place. And I looked at the furniture, and each piece was probably worth $500,000. I mean, the house was full of the most beautiful antiques that Margaret had just dropped over on him one day, had shipped over there. There was great big tall valises and drawers and clocks and, oh my God, they set it all up for him. I asked her, how do you like all this? You probably got more money here tied up. You know, Margaret has more money tied up in furniture than this house is worth and probably the whole neighborhood. He said, I don't like any of it. He says, it's all pretty and all quaint. And he said, it's got vibes on it. You know, he says, we're so sensitive to energy, and this stuff's probably, some of it, 500, 600, 700 years old. It's got all good energy, but he said, I don't want anything. I wish you'd have never sent it here. But Margaret didn't understand James, so so she sent it over anyway. He told her he didn't need anything. He literally didn't. He just wanted to leave and go home, back to Era. So when he came the very last time, he brought me a poem, which I have hanging in there, in our, I call it the bird room, but it's actually the Hall of Fame, where all the famous people bring their things and put them on the walls that visit me over the years. Famous meaning infamous in most cases. I've got a picture there that came from James Brown, bless his soul, wearing my pyramid up at Aspen. It's classic. I got Richard Bach autographing a book to me after we had a fight over who's going to autograph whose book. And he says, I said to Richard Bach, please autograph Illusions. And he said, nope, won't do it. And I says, why not? He says, because you haven't autographed Death of Ignorance, my first book, of course. And I said, well, come on, Richard, you're a world famous author. This is my first book. I'm a nobody. He says, nope. He says, you autograph that and then I'll autograph Illusions. So I autographed the book, one of my Death of Ignorance books, to Richard Bach, who was one of my mentors at the time, like Richard Branson is now in business and world character. I love him very much, what he does. Respect him. And so then he autographed the Illusions book, which came out after Jonathan Livingston Seagull, was his second book. We were up in Oregon at the time at his house, his estate. And that's when he was back when he was married to Leslie. So anyway, so I said to Richard, I said, well, I guess, you know, I've authored a book and signed it to you. I said, does that mean now I'm considered an author? And Richard turned around to me and he said, yeah, you're an author now. Live with it. And then the same thing happened with Brad Steiger, and we wrote a book together called The Promise, which is now available, and it just goes on and on and on. So anyway, by the way, you should order those. They're just brand new. I'll reprint. Really nice. They're just in. Story of my life with Sannyasi. Anyhow, so Sir James Anthony, I'm holding this in my hand, wrote this gorgeous thing, this gorgeous poem. It's on a white parchment paper printed in some strange silver ink. And it's just amazing. And this was the last work he did here before he went back to the Pleiades. And here's a man that I broke bread with. Of course, he never ate. I broke bread and he watched. He never drank. I guess he told me he drank some Perrier from time to time. But anyway. And I'm going to read this, and I'm going to go back over it and explain a few things to you. Because it's so relevant to what we just finished here, you know, with this tape series coming to an end. It's called My Heart's in the Cosmos, Just Over the Hill by Sir James Anthony. Last-minute instructions for a flight through neutral time activate all vortices to our magneto arc mill. I soon would be visiting a very distant love of mine, my heart's in the cosmos, just over the hill. We scan spectrum frequencies and lock down a source. For our antiparticle disseminator, our crystals do fill. After radiating blue-red, we shot away in the force. My heart's in the cosmos, just over the hill. In hyperspeed transitions, only noble hearts will arrive. Raise vibratory is etheric with clear head for a thrill. Maintain MPD arc jets into a scalar tachyon drive. My heart's in the cosmos, just over the hill. Thinking computers in control make jumps easy to learn. Faster than light forces time distance to stand still. Essence follows thought, so the null you'll return, from the null you'll return, my heart's in the cosmos just over the hill. This is sort of like a disclaimer at the end. The flight attendant awakened me as I was dreaming so far. Preparing for a landing, bring your seats forward to nil. Behold the watery blue planet, third place from their star, my heart's in the cosmos over the hill. This is so full of Pleiadian symbolism. It's just symbolic to the guilt. Okay, I'm going to go over this last-minute instructions for a flight through neutral time. What he's saying there, and if you remember the early part of this, last part of the seminar series, what he's saying there is they work through the Andromedan console to set up a projection point, meaning that in these beam projectors, they call them beam ships, you have to have an approach of landing. Let's say you're going from here to the Pleiades, to Era. You wouldn't land inside the planet. You'd land outside in space and use a secondary, slower propulsional system to land. So the last minute instructions for a flight through neutral time, what he's saying is, please make a spot, because sometimes two ships, it's very coincidental. I mean, it's very rare this ever happened, but it has happened. Two ships materialize in the same place in the same time. I mean, think about the odds of that. It's a lot less than an airplane crash, which is a lot less than an auto crash. But the fact is, it's happened over 50,000 years, okay? So, that's what that means. Neutral time means there is no time. You're going to materialize instantaneously in that space. Okay, activate all vortices to our magneto arc mill. Well, that magneto arc mill is a sound-powered, light-separated machine that sends up in the vortices, by the way, are the chambers, the chordal chambers that I've described in the mushroom shell. Okay? I would soon be visiting a very distant love of mine. And he's talking about somebody like Sannyasi, someone that he loves. He's going to visit someone. But it says, very distant love of mine, meaning that they don't see each other very much. Then he says, we scan spectrum frequencies and lock down a source. That's what Bob Lazar was talking about with element 115. When you scan a gravity source to pull you, allow the gravity of that planet to pull you there, okay, to set all of that up, to get out, get the ship up off the ground. So they set it for another place and it pulls the ship off the ground. That's locking on the source. For the antiparticle disseminator, our crystals do fill. The antiparticle disseminator is the device that's going to, it's much like the X1 healing machine that we've talked about. It's the device that's going to project into a chamber where the ship should go. After radiating red-blue, we shot away in the force. Red-blue is a frequency of obviously red and blue, and it's not violet. It's a frequency of infrared. So they go and it generates heat. So they, as the ship picks up energy, it generates heat. So from the outside, it looks to be blue and red. Red will shift down in a Doppler effect in optics. It will always downshift from red to blue. But he phrased it backwards, blue to red, but it's actually backwards. Okay, he did that on purpose. In hyperspeed transitions, I think you all know what that means. Only noble hearts will arrive. Most of you don't know what that means. Hyperspeed transitions means that you dematerialize when you go into this force field that allows you to jump across, 500 light years in a few seconds. You actually dematerialize, like Spock and Captain, what's his name, Kirk, on the Enterprise, when they transported down to a planet, you dematerialize. Now, if you're toxic and you're eating meat or alcohol or cigarettes, when you rematerialize, that your cellular structure is infested with toxins because they're no longer stored in the liver and some of the places, the mast cells, for example, where the body stores toxins, they're no longer there. Okay, they're in every cell in your body. And a good example of what happens is our friend in Switzerland, when he went through some of these transitional jumps, he went from the humble human being he was to a toxic SOB, and he behaved that way. He became Mr. Hitler. The people he sent to my seminar were a squad of hitmen. Barney Hill did it with the Greys. He came back. Betty could adjust to it. Barney didn't, and he died of cancer. Almost all of the contactees that I know and that have made transitional jumps have come back with some form of mental instability. When I built my time machine for several weeks, and it didn't dematerialize me, it just took me ahead in time. That experience alone made me dysfunctional for almost 2 years afterwards as far as my quickness and thought. And I'd go down to the store, I should turn right, I'd turn left, I don't even know why I'd do it. It was a disorientation. That's what he's talking about. So that's why he says only noble hearts will arrive. And then, of course, in raising your frequency, raise vibratory is etheric with clear head for a thrill. What he means is when you are clear and your etheric energy go from your physical body into your etheric body as you dematerialize and you're clear, then you have it's an euphoric, wonderful experience. Sannyasi showed me the experience without going anywhere. I let her raise the vibratory level, and it was no drug on this planet could even come close to the euphoria that I felt, but I wouldn't let her take me anywhere. I knew better. Maintain MPD arc jets into scalar tachyon drive. These are arc jets are around the ship. There's this ring of energy. Now, this is not the echo chamber that we were talking about earlier where Magneto Arc Mill is arcing and is causing this ray, listening to a seashell energy. It's like turning up a seashell and making it really loud. That's what the Magneto Arc Mill does. We're not doing that here. We're talking about getting ready to make the hyper jump, okay, the hyper leap. And that's what they call the MPD arc jets. And this is in my book, Rays of Truth, and it's also going to be in my new book, Scalar Tachyon Drive. We talk about scalar waves all the time on this show and in the tape series. And tachyon drive is exactly what it is. It's the energy within the scalar wave. And remember, many scalar waves produces wave packets, which then when you go into the hologram, you can see all of this. And so we're moving in the hologram. When you go in deep space drive, like he's talking about, we're actually in the hologram. Thinking computers in control make jumps easy to learn. I've talked about these are biocomputers. That mushroom thing that made the Variation 3 hull, it was like a mushroom, was raised in a greenhouse with special sounds to make all the portals, the chambers inside the hull a specific thing. Well, they have computers that are biocomputers. They're raised. They raise them from a seed to a certain point, and then they inject electronics into them, into the neural systems of the nerves of the plant. And we're starting to do that now. And in this Magellan's disease that we're talking about is an experiment gone awry, and this type of manifestation is happening in human bodies in a negative way. That's why they call it the Magellan's disease. But thinking computers in control make jumps easy to learn. We all know what a jump is. A jump is moving from one area of space to another. As I explained earlier in this tape series, the planets out in the Pleiades, there's a lot of them that are less than a light year, so they could map out the energy course before the would actually make a hyper jump. They would use a conventional ion drive to get from point A to point B to map out the energy, because when you dematerialize and you go into this hyperspeed transition and you don't know what the energies are, you don't just do it, you don't guess at it, you have to have coordinates fore and aft, here and there, If you don't have that, you're going to get lost in space and lost in time. So that's what he's talking about here, jumping. It's called jumping. It's easy to learn. Yeah, now it's easy to learn because now they have computers that plot out a probability of what where they're going is going to be without ever being there. And most of them are right, but sometimes they're wrong, and they still get lost in space and time. And then faster than light forces time distance to stand still. Of course, if you're faster than light, time distance stands still. There is no time. There is no distance. That's Andromedan stuff. By the way, the Andromedans do not recognize time. They don't have a clock in their entire society. Think about how that works. Essence follows thought. So from no, you'll return. Okay, what that means, it's a form of jet lag. Do you ever notice when you go to from United States to Europe, your astral body doesn't get there right away? You're there. You maybe get your sleep caught up, but you just don't get that intuition going. It's just not there yet. It take and after you've been there for a couple of weeks, you start to feel, oh, I'm here now. I live here, and I can feel my solar plexus, blah, blah, blah. What they're talking about here is essence follows thought. So from no, you'll return. Meaning that's a big, big jet lag problem, okay? And so the essence, which is the astral body, follows thought, which is your thoughts. So from no, you'll return, meaning that you'll go from a void, and it will come back to you once you get there. And then, of course, the rest of it is just about the flight attendant. I think that came from my book, The Promise, because he'd read it in... In my book, Brad has the flight attendant waking me up at some point because I'd been in the bathroom, not having mile-high sex with Sannyasi, but I'd been teleported out of the bathroom of an airplane into a spaceship and back and forth. And that's in The Promise. You have to read up on it. So with that, I just wanted to share with you the amazing experiences that I've had with real Pleiadians, including Sir James Anthony. I'll tell you what, I miss him so much, but the ship did come. He told me it was coming, and he did get in it. He left everything up there in El Segundo. The government, I guess, came and got their truck, and Margaret probably closed down the house, and he's gone now, and I do miss him. And I literally lived with this man for about a year and a half, which was quite a while. He stayed a couple nights in this house. I never stayed at his house because he didn't have any beds. Until Margaret brought all that junk in, then he wouldn't even stay there at all. He hated all that furniture. I mean, he loved it. It was beautiful. He respected the antiquity of it, but he did not at all care for the fact that it was old and had energy on it, karma on it, you know. And I'm an antique collector, and I love that stuff. But that's me buried in the earth here. I've dug myself a hole in the earth, and I'm living in it in great ecstasy. I love antiques. So I'm having Steve Turner on talk about that radio stuff. It's amazing collectible stuff. And only because it just takes me back. I loved the 30s and the 40s. I was born in the 40s, but I think the 30s life was really amazing. And today, of course, we live in a paranoid police, martial law society. I do remember the freedom. You know, I do remember the cowboy days. I was very young, but we could do anything we wanted. There weren't computers tracking us. The government was different in those days. It was probably still chasing the flag, but it was a different thing, false flag, as we call it. Anyway, I guess we'll wind the old show down, and the Health Energy Science Show. We'll have, of course, many, many more Sunday shows. We got a bunch of other things to be playing, a lot of different tapes that I'll be recording with all kinds of cool lectures and stuff that I've done with, and they're all different. There's so much stuff that I've done that I don't remember. People think that I remember all this. No, I don't. I have to get my own books out to remember what I wrote sometimes because I'm always going in new directions. And then I look back, yeah, that's how that went. You know, I mean, I can't remember everything I write, but because at the time it's either channeled or it's given to me by a Pleiadian or Andromeda, they're either standing there or in a ship nearby downloading me. And I don't, it's like, you know, how many plane trips have you been on? You had a great trip time on each time on a vacation. You get on an airplane, but three plane trips later, do you remember the third one back? Probably not, even though it was a great experience. You might remember being on the plane, but do you remember everything you did? How many times did you go to the bathroom? What did you eat? What did you say? Who were you talking to? Who were your neighbors, on the plane? You don't remember that stuff. So anyway, at least I don't. You know, I don't even want to, but I do enjoy that transportation mode of getting around. So with that, we are at a 55-minute section where these tapes have to end so that when they get replayed later, there's room for 5 minutes worth of commercials. We'll be adding commercials eventually, and I really appreciate everyone taking the time to listen to the tape series. If it's the first time you've ever heard it and you're listening to the last one, go back about 18 hours to the first one and record it all, because you'll save yourself a lot of money and you'll have a lot of fun. We covered a lot of stuff. So anyway, we'll see you next Saturday night with Bob Hoover. And as I say, last Saturday night, which hasn't happened yet, which will be tomorrow night, we'll have Randy Masters on. How's that for a step word back in time? God bless, and have a great existence and a great trip into immortality. This is Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, brought to you at BBS Radio and Tantalk1340.com. Check it out.